back in 2009, there was an idea to create a safe route between an elementary school and a public library in the small village of Eagle. And what grew out of that idea was a tallgrass prairie, an oak savanna, and a wetland restoration project. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show. And here with us to tell this story is Lori Lawler. She's the author of the new book called Restoring Prairie Woods and Pond, How a Small Trail Can Make a Big Difference. And the book really celebrates the often thankless work of volunteers to restore habitat, connect neighborhoods, and, you know, maybe link the past to the future a little bit. Is there a nature trail like this in your community that you're grateful for? Or do you live near a neglected and overgrown lot that you like to do something about? Well, maybe we'll have a little advice for you on how to restore that habitat or maybe build a trail. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lori, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here again.
I was telling you before, this is such a nice book, and it's not huge. It's got beautiful pictures. Did you write it for a specific audience?
That's a great question. It's really designed to appeal to readers from about age 10 to 99. I kind of think of it that
small
way.
Range.
A small range. And I think it's because of the subject matter and one of the big questions that has always intrigued me. What can we do to help save the planet? Mm-hmm. And so the appeal has been much broader than I had imagined. And I think in a lot of ways, it's a very much a people story. Because I've been contacted by folks from Northern Ohio, California, other parts of Wisconsin, Illinois, kind of asking, you know, what can I do in my community? And because it's a small project, you can put your arms around it.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And it didn't cost a whole bunch of money.
No, mm-hmm. No. And that was kind of the big challenge, because Eagle has had a lot of money problems over the years. And it required some big convincing of a large group of people. And I think what's really wonderful is it's a very bare bones budget. It's only 8 acres.
Mm-hmm.
It was truly, truly a mess, as you mentioned. It was abandoned for years. It was filled with garbage, and it was a safety issue. So that was kind of what catalyzed the town to sort of think, how can we create something between the school and the library that will be safe for kids to travel?
Yeah, and it must have been something that helped was the fact that you could see the difference quickly, because
yes,
it is only 8 acres.
Right, right. And I think that is really essential for a lot of folks interested in doing restoration.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, they call it rewilding, but here we call it restoration. And I think that it's also less of a horrible challenge, I think, for people to think, well, how can we keep doing this? Because, as you say, the big work of clearing and coming up with an idea and coming in with these wonderful native plants, but then it's the years and years afterward of keeping that going.
Sure.
And so I think it's a project that is inspiring for that reason.
Mm-hmm. And I can see so many people right now thinking, oh yeah, we've got that area in our area, you know, in our community that we would really love to clean up. And you've been able to utilize, not just clean it up,
yeah,
but it's a teaching area too.
Right. And I think that's what really drew me to this idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because the kids from Eagle Elementary use it as an outdoor classroom. And so they use it all year long, even in the winter. The library lends snowshoes, which is really kind of fun. And they go out and they do readings, they do paintings, they do a lot of artwork. They also do a lot of science and STEM study outdoors. So it's also what I think was really true when I was working on the book during COVID, was how much people really discovered, like, this is a terrific place to find peace, sort of rejuvenate, just be outside. Very easy to access. And I think that that's another reason these small projects can have enormous impact.
Well, let's talk about this small project. Yeah. How did it start? What was the seed?
Well, the seed of it was what started out as a safety issue. And I think what was really key, though, there was a small group of local nature lovers who kind of decided to dream big. And they rallied the community to renovate and to restore this area based on what was kind of an interesting experience. There was a small group of people who went out into this horrible mess, right? Fought their way through. And they started making these amazing discoveries. You know, they found purple coneflower, which is a prairie plant. They found other evidence that something else had been in this place before buckthorn and sumac took over. And what's interesting, the story that really drew me in was these three people went out to look, kind of do a plant inventory, basically. And as they got through, they were kind of walking through the garbage and all this stuff that was there. And suddenly they heard frog song. And it was like, no one knew. There was this little tiny ephemeral pond, which for those folks who, you know, you probably have seen these, they're kind of like, they come and go. Like now during this part of the summer when it gets really hot, they disappear. But it's a great place for frogs. Because there's no fish.
Right. No predators.
No predators. So it was this discovery of the pond that kind of motivated the committee to think bigger and to think we could do three remarkable ecosystems that are interrelated. And the prairie part also was very interesting because of the forensic environmental detective work that was done. They realized that this part of Waukesha County was originally one of the biggest prairies in southeastern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And so looking at old maps, they figured it out. And again, that's something I think folks can do in their communities. Like, what was here before?
Right.
You know, what's buried? Mm-hmm. What's underneath the soil that we can possibly tap into?
Yeah. We've got so much technology at our fingertips these days that that's pretty plausible.
Yeah, exactly. So that, I love to do research, so that was one of the things that I really enjoyed trying to investigate. Mm-hmm. What was here before? Looking at aerial photographs, looking at old settler notes, looking at all kinds of surveyor notebooks, and just finding out what was there. So the plan grew and grew and grew, and luckily they found enough people who were motivated to help and to work on the project. And they got a lot of donations from Builder Square. Different groups came in and donated seed. Agricol donated seed. So again, you know, it's possible with the right outreach that small community groups can do the same. And I think that that's really significant.
One of the quotes you had in your book, and I can't remember now who said it, but they're talking about getting people to come in and help that necessarily aren't interested in restoring the actual thing, but there's connections. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and that was one of the early organizers. His name was David Traver, and he had a really interesting thought, which I think is applicable today, too. He said, a frontal attack on people about nature doesn't really help.
It's so true.
You know, like making people feel bad or guilty or whatever. His approach was really interesting. He loved tractors. And so he had a tractor and he would approach someone. He would say, you know, they'd start talking about engines. And he would start asking them, well, what kind of tractor do you have? Or what kind of, you know, engine work do you do? And it was that personal relationship. He said, well, come over and help us. We're bulldozing this area. We're trying to grade this area. And they came because of the personal relationship with him. And I think building those relationships with people in a community, it really made the huge difference.
So let's go back a little bit now. So you've got the people that have gone out, found the frog, got all excited. What happened next?
The next, well, they had to first convince the committee.
Okay.
And then convince enough people, because people also realized at that point that this was going to take a lot of boots on the ground effort. And so they had to work with trying to find people who had the expertise, but also really wanted to help. So I think what's amazing is they had Boy Scouts, they had teachers, they had firemen, they had all different kinds of folks from the community come out and help. And I think organizing those people and getting them involved was that was a huge effort. But at the same time I'm saying that, I think what I've really noticed as being part of this group more recently, it's fun. And
yes.
And I think that that's something we sometimes forget. Like, it's actually fun to, you know, to dig around in the dirt. And I think especially during COVID, going out, digging, raking, pulling out invasive species, whether you're a grown up or a kid, was really a way to alleviate despair.
Mm-hmm. And a sense of accomplishment.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
And working together. So it's got, I think there's hidden benefits to this kind of work.
For sure. We're talking to Lori Lawler. She's the author of the new book, Restoring Prairie, Woods, and Pond, How a Small Trail Can Make a Big Difference. The book is about how the residents of the village of Eagle built a trail and restored vital natural habitat. We'd love you to join the conversation. Our number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. Well, I hope you can join us again tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show. We get home improvement and advice on how to get water out of our homes and maybe keep it from going in the first place. And then we'll get a reminder about how to stay safe while boating. That's tomorrow starting at 11 right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we are talking about a great grassroots effort in getting a cool trail established in Eagle, Wisconsin. We got to the point where we've got people excited. You've got permission from the city or the township, I'm assuming.
Yes, yes. And actually, excuse me, what was really helpful was Dave Traver, who was very involved in the beginning, was an attorney. So he was able to go in and talk to the city and basically said, and this is another thing that folks might consider, we'll do this for free. You don't have, the city doesn't have to give us any money.
That's always helpful.
Yes. And it's a safety issue, which of course cities also love, right? So I think it was kind of a win-win in that regard, you know, that they could get the people involved and accomplish something with very little cost. So I think that was really, really important. And I also think one other thing that's a kind of a common misperception about these projects is that you have to be an expert. You have to be a landscape designer. You have to have all these, you know, special degrees. They were able to, it's often true that you can get folks to volunteer their services if they have a professional expertise in a certain area. But at the same time, what this particular project relied on was wonderful support. And I think Wisconsin has amazing groups. And one of them is the Wisconsin Wetland Association. There's a lot of information, advice through the Prairie Enthusiast, Wild Ones. There's just a lot of organizations that don't require big fees. Volunteers will come out, take a look at the property, kind of give you suggestions. What are some native plants that will work?
That's so important because you don't want to waste money and time putting things in that really don't belong there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that was really kind of an interesting aspect to the whole thing.
Uh-huh. How long did it take?
It took a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they started in 2009. They they graded it. They got the new plants in. They had to cut down a lot of buckthorn, which folks know is very...
Oh, it's terrible.
It's impossible. And they got the new plants in, and they encountered some really big challenges. You know, there were years of drought where they were really worried that some of the prairie plants that they had seeded wouldn't come up. And luckily, they realized over time, and I think this is a learning experience, they realized that the prairie plants can survive drought. Then there were other years where there were terrific rains, and something like what we've had here in the spring. And the pond overflowed and went all over the place. And so they had frogs. I think this is such a great story. The frogs were so loud, so numerous, and they were trying to get into the library.
I love that story, too. I thought that was so funny.
And it's just, I think one of the other things is sort of our ability to roll with punches. Like, nature is sometimes messy, right?
It is all the time messy.
But also a big adventure. And I think that was what the group learned. And, mm-hmm. and each year they have learned new things, mm-hmm. how to engage high school students, how to engage college kids who are doing community service. And there's just a lot of folks out there who want to help. Mm-hmm. And how do you connect them in a meaningful way so they'll come back?
And that seems to be the case, because obviously this has been going on for quite a long time now, and it's still being renovated.
And I think that's an ongoing project. Yeah. Everybody who knows, anyone who started a prairie knows it's wonderful, but you have to have someone come in and help you do a burn. Mm-hmm. Or when you put in new plants, you have to be aware of, like, where can they actually thrive? So they've learned a lot over the years, but I think it's just a wonderful place to visit.
Mm-hmm. Have you had the case where when this started, there were some probably kids in that elementary school who are now adults? Are they coming back to help?
Yes. And I think that's Gene Weedman, who is a really amazing local person from Eagle, who's a retired teacher, has basically said that. excuse me, as a teacher herself, she said, you work with kids, you get them out and they get muddy. They dig holes, they water things. But you never know, what is the impact until much later. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been a driving force. Like, how has this project perhaps changed the lives, the attitudes of kids as they grow older? Because that's the next generation who will work to save the planet.
Yeah.
So I think their experience, their love of what they've accomplished, will
sure.
help.
And not only the nature, but the evidence of a community working together, the cooperation, that's got to be lasting also.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. While I was there one day, a little girl came who had planted a small plant, a cardinal flower, and she arrived and she looked really distraught and she was like, "Where's my plant?" It was like that ownership, right?
Right, right.
Well, we showed her where it was, but she really, it's like she was invested because she had planted this cardinal mm-hmm. flower and she wanted to know how was it doing.
Sure. Yeah. That's a great way to get kids to eat vegetables, right? Make
right.
them plant them, then they'll want to eat them. So getting back to this book, like I said, it's really, really a good read. It's thin, so it won't take you forever. But I love the section where you go all the way back to the Ice Age.
Yeah.
And it's like a picture of what happened in kind of like, fast time. But it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Did you have to do a lot of investigation on that?
Yes. And I actually love doing research. The hard part for me is doing the writing.
If I
could just do the research, I would just keep doing it. But here at the university, there's wonderful resources looking at some of those early, early years.
Mm-hmm.
What I found to be really fascinating were the aerial photographs that were taken about 1937, looking at farm fields.
Sure.
And so you can kind of watch this piece of land change,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes more and more overgrown. And you watch it even through the Depression. And I think it really kind of, it was very visual for me to kind of imagine what it might have been like to be in this one spot over a period of thousands of years. And what was also really intriguing was the discovery I made of a person I interviewed who was the niece of the woman who actually owned the land. And it was very fascinating because it was a very personal story.
Sure.
Of how this woman's brother had been killed during World War II. He had amassed some money as a soldier, gave it to Agnes, and Agnes kept it. And then she bought this piece of land. So there's sort of this interesting story of generosity and sacrifice, I think, too.
Yes, perfect. We do have a caller, Barry in Richland Center. Go ahead, Barry.
Good afternoon. I got a couple of questions that I'd like to ask. One, you mentioned that you had graded the landscape after cutting the buckthorn, et cetera. What other sorts of preparations did you go through? I'm involved in starting a prairie, and I'm wondering how you handled the residual weed seeds that must have been still in the ground, and how you're managing the weeds in the prairie now.
Thank you for your question. That's a wonderful question, and good luck to you. That sounds like a terrific project. They had to pull a lot of stumps, so there was stump pulling that was going on to kind of level it. What they did was they used prairie grass seed. They seeded it. And over the years, they've also been burning. So that has helped with the weed control. And I think the whole... The amount of time it takes, right, to create a prairie, we have to be so patient. And I think that that's the one thing, another wonderful aspect to the project that I've been able to see. So I think now when we go out and look at the prairie at Eagle Nature Trail, it is just abundance of flowers. But it wasn't like that. And so you have to kind of wait and wait. And I know that's hard. It's hard to do. But they did, you know, they hung in there. And I think fire is a huge part of it.
It's definitely key. And Barry, we do have a prairie expert coming on Garden Talk on Friday, August 30th. So Neil DeBoll will be with us. So if you've got any questions about that, please give us another call so we can go further into that with our expert there. So thanks for calling. Yeah. So when right now, everybody can use it, right? It's not just...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So people walking their dogs, riding their bikes. There's a photography contest. So a lot of people show up with their cameras, their cell phones. They take pictures of bees, sandhill cranes, mm-hmm. whoever's visiting. And I think that's the real beauty of the place that people are noticing over the seasons. The installation of so many wonderful native plants has brought back native insects, native birds, native amphibians. And I think that has created a lot of interest in the community, and people come back to see, well, what's there now? Mm-hmm. You know, it's constantly changing.
Have that brought people into the community that don't live there to see this?
Yeah, actually, a couple folks, and I was going to invite people to come and visit.
Yes.
Yeah, please come. I've had a couple folks from the Chicago area specifically come up. So they're eco-tourists.
Sure.
In Eagle, which is wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be good for the restaurants in town and the gas stations and everything else. So, and you're really close to Old World Wisconsin, too.
Right.
So that's maybe you have a little bit of a spill over there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And the Kettle Moraine State Forest, which is just splendid, too.
Yes.
So that's another.
It's beautiful. It is a beautiful part of the state. So that helps, too. Now, over the years, you've added some things to the initial trail, too, right?
Yes. So the trail now has like a little woodland walk, which is kind of another little which was very fun to put in. They've included a boardwalk out into the wetland area so people can go out and look at the little pond when it's full.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're every year things start changing. And I think, again, that's what's so wonderful about this kind of project. It changes depending on suggestions, what people are interested in, and then as they come and visit, what do they notice? What's different?
Uh-huh.
I think that's great.
Yeah, that is great. And then getting back to your book now, so again, it's Restoring Prairie, Woods, and Pond. Where can people get this?
You can get it at any independent bookstore. Actually, the paperback version of it just came out this week,
perfect.
So that's really terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's available through independent bookstores, through Amazon, through The publisher themselves, which is Holiday House in New York.
Yeah. And one thing, too, as we didn't talk about, is that you've divided into seasons in the back, so you can kind of see what it looks like in the different seasons. So that's great, too. So, Lori, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you. And again, good luck to folks trying out this kind of community work. It's really fun.
Absolutely.
And I really encourage people to give it a try.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for being with us. We're talking to Lori Lawler. She's the author of several books, including Rachel Carson and her book that changed the world. So check that one out. She's actually living here in southern Wisconsin. So join us again tomorrow, the Larry Mueller Show. This and all our shows are, of course, a team effort. I want to thank our producers, Claire Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our technical directors. I am the executive director, Jill Nadeau. And of course, Larry Mueller is our host. Stay well.